Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
We've got only a small part into this year of 2009 with its turbulence, tempest and fire, but already we're clear how little we understand this vast land of ours and what's in it. Take the strange tree Jacqueline Hodder is going to tell you about. Ever heard of it? And what's it got to do with climate? Jacqueline Hodder is at the University of Melbourne.
I'd like you to imagine Australia's vast interior. Do you picture a dry red landscape where it is so still and silent you can almost hear the earth breathe? Or do you picture endless red sand dunes or barren rock where the land is empty and thirsting for water? When I think of the desert, I think of the stillness and the space, but I also think of the surprises the desert has shown me. I picture a huge crater left from a meteor's imprint. I picture a carpet of desert flowers blooming amongst red sandy soil. And I picture Uluru, rising up from the flat desert scape like an unfolding animal. The desert holds many surprises, but one of the most intriguing to me is the Wadi tree. The Wadi tree is a miracle of arid zone climate botany. It can grow as tall as 18 metres, and its woodland forests stretch for up to 5 kilometres in an otherwise barren landscape. That it can grow in these conditions, and to such lengths and heights, without necessarily being linked to water drainage channels or fixed sand dunes, seems amazing to me. The indigenous keepers of the stories of this land believe the tree was the link between earth and sky. Hardly surprising, when the tree itself looks like a ladder bridged between the two. Recently, I discovered that the Wadi tree has a role to play in a European story linking earth and sky. The Wadi tree is a rare and endangered species of wattle, and it mainly grows at three locations, near Birdsville and Boolia in western Queensland, and at the Mac Clark Acacia Puce, the Wadi tree's botanical name, conservation reserve southeast of Alice Springs. All the stands are located on the fringes of the Simpson Desert, but they're separated by hundreds of kilometres. No one really knows why these populations are so truncated. Some theories suggest the stands are relict populations of a once widely dispersed forest that spread across the Simpson Desert. The theory goes that the prevailing winds may have smothered tracts of Wadi tree forests until only these three localities were left. Another theory is that burning may have reduced the population to its current size, because there's evidence the trees are fire sensitive. More recently, human incursion into the desert over the past 150 years or so has also had an impact. Pastoralists, for instance, used Wadi tree wood to make buildings and fences. Sizable trees in the desert must have seemed a bounty to their eyes. Cattle grazing and introduced species such as camel and rabbit have also had an impact. The tree's remarkable to me because it grows in some of the harshest terrain in Australia. Google Earth the regions where it grows, and you'll be presented with sweeping views of red and rocky land. It seems unlikely anything could grow here, let alone a tree of this size. And yet, it's one of the few trees that can grow on stony downs country. In fact, the tree's not particular about the kind of soil it needs to grow in. Gibberplain, sandy loam, alluvial soil, it does not seem to matter. The tree's ability to grow in such unforgiving conditions drew the interest of the Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations. The FAO investigated its potential as an arid zone plantation forest tree, but decided it was too slow growing to be of use. The seeds do germinate quickly, but rate of growth after that is very slow, a maximum of 30 centimetres per year, even in the most optimum conditions. I first came across mention of the Wadi tree when I was living in Alice Springs years ago. I met an elderly brother and sister who'd come to call the desert home. Although Jack and Mary had lived extraordinary lives in the coastal capitals, they never talked about those lives, preferring instead to talk about the desert and its surprises. I learnt a lot from them, not just about desert facts, but about how to appreciate all that this seemingly empty place could teach me. Jack had started his apprenticeship in his father's engineering workshop in 1914 and told me that woodworkers often complained about the damage done to their tools when working with Wadi tree timbers. You see, the timber is very hard and heavy, almost as heavy as lead. Its hardiness made it an exceptional building material for early settlers. Even today, buildings and fences made with the wadi tree show little sign of decay. The wadi tree's deep purplish heartwood make it a lovely timber to work with. Jack had ornaments he'd made, and they had a brilliant shine because the wood takes a beautiful polish. Wadi trees can live to a great age. Burke and Wills passed by the current stand at Boulia on their expedition to explore inland Australia. Wills wrote about the tree in his journal, dated 8 January 1861. Quote, "We passed one or two little rises of sand and pebbles, on which were growing some trees quite new to me. But for the seed pods, I should have taken them for a species of casuarina, although the leaf stalks have not the jointed peculiarities of those plants. The trunks and branches are like the she-oak, the leaves like those of a pine. They droop like a willow, and the seed is small, flat, in a large flat pod, about 6 inches by 3/4 inch. For some years there was controversy about whether it was Wills who made the first wadi tree type collection. However, further investigation deemed this unlikely. Why would Wills make only one selection from all the plants he'd seen and carry it through his dwindling days when the expedition seemed doomed and every other unnecessary item had been discarded? A more likely story is that Murray, sent with Howitt to exhume Burke and Wills' bodies and return them to Melbourne, carried out exploratory sorties while they were in this area, and that it was therefore Murray who made the first type collection. The significant thing here is that the trees which Wills passed by at Boulia and the trees from which Murray took the type collection at Birdsville could still be alive today, because wadi trees can live for 200 to 300 years and possibly even longer. I can only imagine what the sight of the wadi tree must have looked like to Will's green-starved eyes. It must have seemed like a landmark in an increasingly hostile environment. I found a picture of the Birdsville stand in a book called Native Plants of Queensland by K.A.W. Williams. In the middle of the picture, standing like a lighthouse beacon on bare cliffs, is a solitary tree. It looks as if it's wandered off by itself, because I can see a few of its friends in the distance straggling along behind. The caption says, "The illustration demonstrates the isolation of many individual trees. On all sides of the tree, the land is flat and red, although there is a rocky outcrop on the horizon. The land looks utterly oven-baked. I can almost feel the heat as I look at the picture." The Birdsville stand today is vulnerable because not enough younger plants are growing to replace older ones. The Mac Clark Reserve in the Northern Territory is the only reserve dedicated to protecting the species, although the Birdsville and Boulia stands are nominated for the Register of the National Estate. The Australian Heritage Database lists the Birdsville stand as decreasing because, quote, "Threats to this species include drought pressure, browsing by domestic animals." For an example of the damage browsing animals have done, I refer to the 1982 Chuck Report, written for the Northern Territory Government, called The Status and Ecology of Acacia Puce. In it, Chuck explains the damage done to the Northern Territory stand by feral animals such as camel and rabbit. The camel, because they break down fences designed to keep cattle from grazing in the reserve area, and rabbits, because plant regeneration is difficult when rabbit populations are present. There's a particularly telling photograph from the Chuck Report, which shows a fence line down the middle of the page, splitting the land in two like a part in a person's hair. To the left, vegetation grows up to the fence line, while on the right, there's nothing. It's a stark reminder to me of the value of conservation. I think Jack and Mary were aware of this situation some 30 years ago when they first encountered the wadi tree. Jack and Mary, along with some friends from Birdsville, became especially concerned for these trees. They wrote to Dr. Johnson, then director of the Royal Botanic Gardens in Sydney, who replied he was grateful for the interest and expressed his desire that the young plants at Birdsville be protected. 30 years later, it seems they're still vulnerable. I hope they will continue to be preserved. Researchers at James Cook University in Queensland are collecting data which will provide an accurate assessment of the wadi tree's conservation status and, presumably, help in its preservation. While the researchers were working on this project, they discovered some interesting facts which led them to consider its implications in climate change science. The ability to map climate change over time and measure carbon storage and emission for a carbon trading economy becomes increasingly important as debate grows over global warming and the current state of the environment. Now that Australia has signed the Kyoto Protocol and is set to commence an emissions trading agreement, accurate information regarding carbon storage and emission rates becomes paramount. To further my understanding of the Wadi Tree's connection to the climate change field, I rang Dr. John Lulley from the School of Earth and Environmental Sciences at James Cook University in Townsville. Dr. Lulley's been researching the history and biology of the Wadi Tree. Firstly, Dr. Lulley investigated the Wadi Tree's dendroclimatology potential. Tree ring analysis can not only predict tree age, dendrochronology, but can be used to indicate past climatic conditions, dendroclimatology. Trees in Australia are not usually well suited for dendroclimatology analysis because they can grow for most of the year, rather than in clearly defined seasons like in the Northern Hemisphere. But Dr. Lulley thought the Wadi Tree had dendroclimatology potential because the trees have clearly delineated rings, grow significantly after rainfall events, and can live for hundreds of years. However, the results were disappointing. Dr. Lulley had sent specimens from dead trees to Dr. Patrick Baker at Monash University in Melbourne. Dr. Baker's one of only two or three dendroclimatology experts working in Australia. He told me that the Wadi Tree analysis had been frustrating because the tree's rings were, in fact, too inconsistent from one radius to another. But while dendroclimatology analysis of the Wadi Tree proved unsatisfactory, scientists found that the Wadi Tree's woody debris revealed unexpected carbon sources. Also, the debris' slow rate of decomposition led researchers to consider the potential of other arid zone trees for carbon accounting purposes. A quick glance at the webpage, Discover James Cook University, explains that Wadi Tree timber can remain intact, storing carbon and providing habitat for at least 200 years, and much likely longer than that after death. According to Dr. Lulley, although the arid ecosystems in which the Wadi Tree live have low productivity, the length of time in which carbon is stored in this tree is impressive. The Wadi Tree is too rare to provide currency in carbon trading accounts, but the tree does point to the potential of other arid zone woodland trees, such as the Gidgee, which have not been considered before. It's very early days in the carbon trading economy. Arid zone woodlands hold previously unquantified sources of carbon, and it is the Wadi Tree which has pointed to this potential. When I met Jack and Mary, and they introduced me to this remarkable tree, they, and I, had no idea that climate change would become such a significant issue, or that the Wadi Tree might play a role in this emerging economy. Jack and Mary just wanted to preserve the tree because they knew and respected it and the desert. Its woodland stands, hidden on the fringes of the Simpson Desert, are about as far away from the Canberra decision-makers as one could imagine. And yet, this magnificent tree, once a mythical link between earth and sky, is providing new directions for the arbiters of carbon trading, perhaps a modern version of an ancient link between the earth and the sky.
As ancient as you can get, but with a new twist. Jacqueline Hodder is at the University of Melbourne. Next week, Jeff Hudson on Manhattan. I'm Robin Williams.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.